headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day, wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. Today's title is Jesse Ventura is an Ass. Partially because, naturally, the attention-getting titles tend to get more listens. But also because, evidently, it's the truth. I have been planning on talking about this topic for some time now. But it always seemed like something else was more important. Something kept coming up. Something trumped it. And never did get around to having this discussion. After the lawsuit was settled, it became paramount that we have a discussion. Because it seems like everybody just piled on. Now, I have a different take than most people in regards to the lawsuit itself. And I'll get there, and we'll discuss that. And if anybody wants to hop in the chat room and chime in on it, be happy to engage. Not an issue. The bottom line is here, though. I think we all can pretty much agree that Jesse Ventura, in this particular case, with the Chris Kyle defamation lawsuit, was utterly ridiculous. It was. I mean, what was the point? Defamation of character is difficult to prove. And the standard is set even higher when you are in the public eye. So the very idea, the very notion that you had a chance of winning this lawsuit in the first place was pretty asinine. I don't even think that Jesse believed he could do it. I think he was trying to make a point. And here's where my take on it goes very different than a lot of other people's. I don't have a problem with him filing this lawsuit while Chris Kyle was still alive. I don't think anybody else should have a problem with it. Bottom line is these were two grown men. One, a bona fide Navy SEAL sniper, one of the best to ever fire a rifle, and a true American hero. No doubt about it. He died under very tragic and difficult to foresee circumstances where an individual with bona fide mental instabilities shot him on a rifle range. He was having some issues. Chris Kyle and his buddies were trying to calm him down. Everything seemed okay, and the next thing you know, he shoots him. Chris Kyle dies on the spot. Now, for most folks, that would have this lawsuit being over, said and done. No more. No mas. There's no point in it. But Jesse continued, claiming that this was about clearing his name. The circumstances regarding the lawsuit, if you still haven't heard, were as follows. In Chris Kyle's book, he made the assertion that there was a fight that took place in a bar in California. The individual who was not named at that point in time was making anti-military and specifically anti-Navy SEAL comments. In fact, the comment that set off Mr. Kyle was that the SEALs deserve to lose a few. Now, there's two things that goes on right here. Number one, Jesse Ventura claims, and this is a claim that's actually been challenged in a lot of notions. For one, I don't know. I tend to want to take Jesse at his word on this. Claims to have been a Navy SEAL. Now, if that's not the case, so be it. If you don't believe he was, so be it. But I can tell you this much from my own personal experience. dealing in the modern military, this day and age, it can leave such a bad taste in your mouth that you're going to want to forget that you served. But before all that transpired, it's pretty obvious that looking at statements that Jesse Ventura has made in the past, it's clear he had a very bad taste in his mouth when it came to military service. Does that make it okay to make a statement like, SEALs deserve to lose a few? Obviously not, but I can tell you this much. If Jesse Ventura had served, he knew before making that statement that he was going to get his ass whipped, or he was going to have to start whipping some ass. It's just that simple. You don't go up to a Marine and tell him the Marines deserve to have a few killed in the line of duty. You don't go up to an Army Ranger and say, hey, the Rangers deserve to die. And you certainly do not go up to a Navy SEAL and say, hey, the SEALs deserve to lose a few. You don't do it. So here's the deal now. What a lot of people didn't know, which by now most people who actually care enough to know, do know, is in the book, Ventura never was mentioned. What came to light, what became the issue, is in a radio interview, Chris Kyle admitted that it was Jesse Ventura. He said so in a radio interview. And then the defamation suit gets launched. Now, as long as this was a fight between Jesse Ventura and Chris Kyle, that's reasonable enough. I mean, even if it happened, I can understand being embarrassed. You don't want that to go on. And you want it challenged. But again, here's the thing that most people keep missing. The bar is set so high in a defamation suit before you add the extra level of bar raising that's involved with celebrity that they're very difficult to win. I don't know how anybody going into this thing, Jesse included, thought that he could actually win. So, he pursued it, though. And I don't know if he thought it helped his cause, or if he thought it would make it easier. Ultimately, though, he continued the lawsuit even after Chris Kyle's death. Now, that drew the ire of a good many people. And, again, I had every intention of talking about that topic at that point in time, because it was time, Jesse, it was time. Give it up. Don't go after the widow and the kids. It's bad karma. The money from the books, and I don't know if Jesse knew this or not, but Mr. Ventura, the money from the books that Chris Kyle wrote, it didn't come to the Kyle estate. It was going to help other wounded warriors. Chris Kyle was dedicated to trying to help his fellow soldier. He always believed that he would have more time later to take care of himself and his family. He thought he had time and he thought he was okay. As it turned out, the unforeseen happened. Now, enter this guy with the mental imbalance, and you have the recipe for the conspiracy theories. I've heard a ton of people say that he was assassinated. He had given up too much information in some of his books. That he had disclosed something that was still supposed to be classified, but because nobody realized it, everything was cool, but he had to be silenced before he accidentally did it again, or intentionally did it. Was Chris Kyle assassinated that day? I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what's going on, but I know that it fits all the earmarks of all these wonderful things. But that's not the point of the show today. It's not the point of what we're trying to cover. The point of what we're trying to cover is what makes Jesse Ventura an ass. And this is the part that does, right here. He's always been a bit of an ass. There's no question about it. But I have enjoyed myself watching his conspiracy theory show. I have. It's fun. It's entertaining. Take most of it with a grain of salt. But it's entertaining. And it's still better than Real Housewives of whatever location it happens to be on tonight on Bravo. So, when I say this, I don't say this as a Jesse Ventura hater. I say this as a reasonable person looking from the outside who has to question the motives in the first place of this lawsuit. I say this as a reasonable person from the outside looking in saying, why on earth? Because, you know, it had to come out during the course of the trial. It had to come out. This money was not going to come out of the proceeds from the book sales. When you find that out, why don't you drop it then, Jesse? But here's the worst part. Okay, you're in this to clear your name. You want your name cleared. Well, then justice was served. You somehow, miraculously, won this lawsuit. Now, it's my understanding that somehow his lawyers managed to get these very narrow definitions put in place and a lot of stuff that ordinarily would be allowed in a defamation suit was forced to be withheld and thrown out. And with all this removed and a very limited amount of testimony allowed, somehow, magically, poof, there you go. Okay, so Jesse, you won. Mr. Ventura, you won. Your good name, in the eyes of the court, is restored. But what's your next step? Your next step is to do a couple of interviews and say that, well, you're going to pay your lawyers with that money. That you didn't have some insurance company paying your way. And then no real discussions early on about what you were going to do with the rest of that money. Now, Jesse, I can't believe that you needed the money. You said all along it was about justice and clearing your name. So then why didn't you let it go then? It's ridiculous. Now there's some talk after that you were going to give a big chunk of it to some charity. What about the widow and the children of this dead American hero that has to come up with this money? Jesse, if it was really about clearing your name, if it was really about justice, then why didn't you say after you won, I don't need the money? I mean, all it would have took would be asking the judge to forgive the debt. All it would have took was to sign it back over. If you honestly thought you had to pay your lawyers out of this money, then fine, pay the lawyers and then give the rest of it right back. Stroke of a pen on your part. Don't even need the court for that. That would have been justice. Jesse Ventura, for everything else that you are, for everything else that you may be, you are an entertainer, you are a highly opinionated person, you are a skilled politician. But plain and simple, Jesse Ventura, you are an ass. Let the widow and the children of a fallen hero be in peace. Now, I had almost given up on discussing this topic at this point in time. Thought maybe it had been too long, but I actually came across folks again today still talking about it. So I figured it's still topical enough to have the discussion. So I hope you guys don't mind me having my little rant about it at this point in time. Now, there's a lot of other things going on in the world, so we're going to switch gears and move on to something a little more important than the Jesse Ventura thing. I do want to mention briefly Robin Williams' passing. It certainly came as a surprise and a shock to me when I first heard it, along with lots and lots of other people. I was a fan of his comedy. I had been a fan of Robin Williams since the days of Mork and Mindy. It was hard not to like Mork from Mork. I distinctly remember several episodes, and I loved the show. Have a very warm place in my heart reserved for movies like Patch Adams. Certainly enjoyed some of his more dramatic roles like Good Will Hunting and Dead Poets Society. He was very versatile and a very talented man, but he was indeed fighting some very big personal demons. As a result of that, he struggled with depression. It was well known, very well documented, that he had his issues with drug dependencies and pharmaceutical chemical abuse. In fact, he had even made a joke of it. It was a big part of his routine and towards the middle of his career. But as tragic as his passing is, and as tragic as it is when anyone loses their fight with depression, I find it even more tragic some of the vitriol in some of the social media posts that have followed the demise. Now, I absolutely go berserk when it comes to some of these public outpours when celebrities pass. Now, there's nothing wrong with showing respect and appreciation for the lifetime of work for artists like Andy Griffith, for example. That's one of the most recent ones that come to mind. And, of course, for Robin Williams. But for him to be held up like some type of role model or hero is probably taking it too far. Because while he certainly influenced a lot of comedians, should he be a role model for our children? Obviously not. Does that mean we have to attack the man? No. A little respect for the dead is always a good idea. This man earned every penny he had, and evidently he had some financial issues. Now, that's some of the reports going on, and I don't want to get too far down the road about his actual passing until more information comes out. But the man is worthy of praise, and his talents will definitely be missed. But it is absolutely shocking to me. I've seen posts from people that I know who are reasonable people that attacked the man and said negative things because he had made jokes about Christianity. I heard some of the same things when George Carlin died, and George Carlin had a whole routine about taking a crack at God. Is it okay? No, it's not okay to do that, but you know what? He was part of the Hollywood crowd, and that's par for the course. Again, that doesn't make it okay. I'm not saying you should accept it, and if that's how you really feel, that's fine. But right now is not the time. It's just too soon to just come out and say that. The media's approach should have been, okay, here was a great comedian. Not necessarily a great man, but a great comedian. Tremendous talent. But it just goes to show, just like thousands, if not millions, of other Americans every day are fighting the battle with depression. They're fighting the battle with bipolar. They're fighting the battle with whatever a certain mental illness they may have. And the focus of the media should be to draw more attention on public health. And how it's okay to go get help. And how important it is, once you go after that help, that you continue to do little things like stay on your medication. One of the toughest things for bipolars to do, stay on the medication, because of the way it makes them feel. The focus should be on what can we learn from this, and then later on, do whatever. I mean, it would be no different than me sitting here and telling a Ward Jr. joke. You know, the young man got hit by a car on the racetrack. And I could sit here and do a bit like, this just in, and breaking news. Ward Jr. today, after realizing he wasn't going to win the race, decided to follow another passion and seek a new career as a speed bump. Now, is that a funny joke? Well, it could be. But it's a little soon. And it's terribly inappropriate and horribly insensitive. So, this isn't so much about sensitivity. So when I'm talking to the folks that are out there making these negative posts about Robin Williams, I'm not asking you to have a newfound respect for Robin Williams. I'm saying have a little respect for his family and his friends who are grieving. Hold your post there. But, you know, the same still goes for all the people that are talking like Robin Williams was a god, because he wasn't. He was a man. He was flawed. He committed a terribly selfish act. And everyone wants to equate the suicide with the disease of the depression. Robin Williams may have had a mental disorder, but the suicide was still a choice. And it was a terribly selfish one. And that's really about all I want to say about that. Other than, guys, please, tone down the rhetoric. Don't get at each other's throats over something, and in particular over someone that you really don't know. It's not fair to judge him until you've walked a mile in his shoes. I have not. So I'm not going to. I appreciate his work as a professional, and I will miss any future performances that he had coming down the pike. The man was such a talented comedian, and he brought joy that obviously he himself could not feel to a lot of people. And there's nothing more tragic than to be surrounded by people and to bring so much joy to so many and to still feel like you're alone. So it's very sad. But guys, we got to pick it up and we've got to move on. Let's try to be supportive to the people who did know him personally, who are legitimately grieving. And then let's get back to the things that are important. Helping our fellow man grieve through bad times is important. So that's an important thing. But to get into knockdown, drag-out fights over something as mundane as a joke the man told one time, it's a bit much. So Let's just reel it back. I mean, your opinions are completely legitimate. I'm not cracking on any of you for feeling any certain way. If you're already tired of seeing all the posts and tributes and all that stuff on the social media, then take a few days off of social media. Now, there's something that's tough. How many people are actually willing to do that? How many of you guys will take a couple of days off from social media? Stay away from the Facebook. Don't you be tweeting. Get away from Pinterest. Instagram, no pictures. This is an interesting idea. At some point in time, I think we should all have a challenge. And the challenge being to spend a week with no social media. Now, for the purposes of doing the show and reaching a wider audience, that would be very difficult for me. I would probably have to get somebody else to, hey, can you post this? And considering that some of the interactions that I've had at the on the show, when we do it over on Blog Talk, social media would be very difficult not to be involved with. And that's a big part of how we promote the show after it's done. So it would be tough. But, you know, I'm willing to do that. If I could get somebody that would post for me, and I think I could probably do that. So at some point in the near future, I think I'm going to challenge you guys to go a week with zero social media and see how it feels. You know, I'm not asking to be completely unplugged. You don't have to give up the email. You don't have to give up the other stuff. You can keep texting. I don't come completely away from it. I think there's a ton of people in this country that could not make it a week. In fact, there's probably about half the folks that find this show in the podcast version later. If you're not listening to it live and you check us out on the podcast later, there's probably a ton of you folks right there, whether it's over on iTunes or you're finding this on Stitcher.com or at TuneIn.com. Or if you're finding the player up, if you're going to the website at tapintothetruth.com, wherever you're going, if you're listening to the podcast, I would be willing to bet that you probably couldn't go 2 days without social media. You know what? That's all right. It's fine. I mean, people need to be able to connect, and unfortunately, that's where we're at. So anyway, I'm going to digress from this, and I'm going to get back to some more serious issues, because, you know, there are some things going on in the world that I still haven't adequately talked about. We can talk about this ISIS thing every day. We can talk about the Israel-Hamas situation every day, and we're still not going to get anywhere with it. But we are going to discuss that. But when we come back from the break, we're also going to discuss a court ruling that happened that I think is very important. We're going to touch on that first, and then we're going to have a little discussion about international politics. So, if you'll be so kind as to stay with me, we'll be right back.
Well, I'll stay so we can talk about the things that we kept so safe. And I know that we won't let each other go, even through closing doors.
Tap into the truth. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com. For our latest blog post, and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth, right here.
You were standing by the bar.
You were drinking, but you still look so sad. So I went up to you and I gave it the best that I had.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for staying with us. We are back. And I promised you we were going to talk about a court ruling that I came across today. We're going to go over the article, and then we'll discuss that just a little bit. It seems that a federal judge has ruled that AR-15s are not protected by the Second Amendment. Now, I don't know exactly how any weapon in particular can be singled out if it is actually a rifle or a handgun. But there are certain extensions that certainly take place, and I understand how that can be. You know, the bottom line is there are certain things that obviously should not be in the hands of everyday people. I don't think we need rocket-propelled grenades, so no grenade launchers. And you can make the argument about full auto. I'm willing to listen to that. And I am a strict constitutionalist, I am. But I am also a pragmatist in so much that I know some people that it would scare the living crap out of me to know that they own firearms. There are some people that just shouldn't have guns. It's just that simple. You know, even in previous shows when I've had Master Gunsmith Cody Stockton on as a guest, and we've talked about ridiculous gun laws and things of that nature, you know, he made the point that he has a lot of customers that you know, some of them, it scares them that they have guns. When you talk to somebody that you know is absolutely bat crap crazy, they probably shouldn't have weapons. But here's the thing. Unfortunately, just about everybody on the left thinks every conservative is bat crap crazy. Why? Well, because they don't agree with them. The political side of the spectrum that trumpets inclusiveness and diversity can't stand it if you think differently than them. But anyway, let's get back to this article before I go too far down the primrose path. I'll probably get some nasty emails for having referenced that some people shouldn't have guns. Some people shouldn't. But anyway, in what looks to be a just absolutely terrible ruling, that's at first, but this was a federal ruling, okay? But at first, this is really only going to affect folks in Maryland. Maryland gun owners are going to have to deal with this because a federal judge has essentially said that guns that were regulated by the states last year, which includes AR-15s and AK-style rifles, as well as other magazine-fed semi-auto rifles with certain features. Not that you can see me doing the air quotes, but trust me, they were there. This ruling says that these particular weapons fall outside of Second Amendment protection as, quote, dangerous and unusual arms. Now, this was disclosed in a 47-page opinion by U.S. District Judge Catherine C. Blake. So, Catherine thinks that AR-15s and AK-47s and other magazine-fed semi-automatic rifles, well, They're dangerous and unusual. And you know what? They may be in the wrong people's hands. But I have an AR. Had it for a little while now. I have a few other weapons, firearms. So far, haven't killed anybody. So I kind of scoff at the idea that they're dangerous or unusual. But at any rate, the case in question was Colby versus O'Malley, which named numerous plaintiffs, including an Associated Gun Club. Okay, I'm sorry, the Association Gun Clubs of Baltimore, licensed firearm dealers, Maryland State Rifle and Pistol Association, and the National Shooting Sports Foundation, among others, which challenged the constitutionality of Maryland's strict new gun laws. Some of Blake's comments during the course of this opinion are as follows. Quote, upon review of all the parties' evidence, the court seriously doubts that the banned assault long guns are commonly possessed for lawful purposes, particularly self-defense in the home, which is at the core of the Second Amendment rights, and is inclined to find the weapons fall outside Second Amendment protection as dangerous and unusual. Alright, so did you catch that? Upon review of the party's evidence, the court seriously doubts that the banned weapons in this particular case are commonly possessed for lawful purposes. So in other words, if you own an AR-15 or an AK-style weapon, chances are you have bad intentions. The court, which means she, seriously doubts that you are actually a law-abiding citizen. That your weapon of choice, if you prefer an AR-15, which is a heck of a little rifle, by the way. Well, that's just, it just doesn't fit. There's no way you're going to use that for self-defense in the home. And we all know that it was only self-defense in the home that the Second Amendment was meant to protect. You know, that's funny. I seem to recall that the Second Amendment was designed, since having read some of the Federalist Papers, and actually I've read most of them. I need to go back and reread them because it's really been a long time since I have. But having read some of the Federalist Papers, it seems to me like the whole intent of the Second Amendment was so that we would have a militia available at the drop of a hat. See, we didn't have a standing army at that point in time. And in fact, the Founding Fathers, and then later on the Framers, they were very suspicious of standing armies. They thought that they would only be used, and could only be used, to enforce tyranny. So they wanted the people to be able to be our military. They wanted the people, they wanted the farmers and the businessmen and the people fighting for their homes and their families to be the ones that were motivated, trained well enough to go fight when they needed to. But remember, war was fought in a different way then. You know, the time came that we did need to have a standing army. I mean, it was just, there's no two ways about it. But at the time that the Second Amendment was written, this right was not intended to solely be about self-defense in your home. It was intended, per the preamble to it, in order to maintain a well-regulated militia, it was intended for us to be prepared at the drop of a hat to stand up against tyranny, to be able to defend ourselves not only from criminals, but from criminals claiming to be the government. AR-15s and AK-style rifles probably pose a threat to those who would prefer tyranny over liberty in this country. This statement alone shows a fundamental lack of understanding of what the Second Amendment actually says and what its intention was. Anyway, also continued saying, first, the court is not persuaded that assault weapons are commonly possessed based on the absolute number of those weapons owned by the public. Even accepting that there are 8.2 million assault weapons in the civilian gun stock. As the plaintiffs claim, assault weapons represent no more than 3% of the current civilian gun stock, and ownership of those weapons is highly concentrated in less than 1% of the U.S. population. Now that statement also goes a long way towards showing exactly where this judge is at, where this judge is coming from. This court, translation, this judge, is not persuaded, would not be persuaded, had made up her mind before the evidence was presented, and wants to use a lawyer trick in saying that the weapons, because of the numbers involved, are not commonly owned. Well, that is not relevant to the legality. The very fact that they continued this judge continued to talk about unusual, not common, continues to make the point that this judge had already made up her mind. It's not relevant how many people actually own them. They're not the most economically available weapons. They do cost a little bit more than, say, your average handgun. You typically are going to have to go somewhere other than your local pawn shop to find them. But what this does is it gives us a very dangerous precedent, because this will allow the people in Maryland to continue to be assaulted by their state government and by the federal government and have their Second Amendment rights eroded yet further. I said a little while ago that there are obviously some people who should not have guns. But that doesn't mean that I'm properly suited to make the determination of who is and who isn't qualified to have that gun. And I certainly know for a fact that there's a ton of folks in our government that are not qualified to make those decisions. Our government continues to push to try and find an end around towards limiting gun ownership in this country, when it really should just be this simple. If you don't want to own a gun, then don't own a gun. But don't advertise the fact that you don't have a gun, because you don't want criminals to know that you don't have a gun, and you don't want your local government to know that you don't have a gun. We have unfortunately moved past a time in our country's history where we used to be able to count on a mutual respect between ourselves and law enforcement. Now, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of great cops out there. There are. Police officers are not the enemy, no matter what a lot of people instantly think whenever they see a uniform and a badge. The problem is there are a lot of bad cops out there, too. And those bad cops have literally ruined the entire image. It used to be people grew up in this country honoring and respecting the police the same as they did firefighters and doctors and teachers and astronauts. They were in the top list of things you wanted to be when you grew up. It's not the case anymore. 9 times out of 10, you go to see a Hollywood movie, the cops in it are probably the bad guy. The cops are more likely to be the bad guys than they are to be the good guys. A few bad apples go a long way towards spoiling the bunch. At least as far as perception is concerned. And as we all know, in the modern world, in the internet age, where information travels the world in a second, and misinformation travels faster than truth, perception is reality for millions of people. Billions of people, actually. So, if you can't count on mutual respect, there has to be an equalizer. Concealed carry? Keep some guessing. If you're forced to respect your fellow man long enough, eventually it becomes a habit. So there you go. All right, now this, before we run completely out of time, because I wanted to try and keep the show close to an hour tonight, didn't want to run much longer than that, let's try and get on with it, because here's the thing, it's something that's bugging me. We're going to talk about the issue with Hamas in Israel. We've been talking about it, we've had in-depth conversations with it, but I'm still hearing, and I'm still seeing people who are just completely clueless. They continue to talk about Hamas like there is some moral equivalency between Hamas and Israel. This is your wake-up call, ladies and gentlemen. There is no moral equivalency. None. All you have to do is take a look at all these little ceasefires that they've had since this conflict began. Are you looking at them? Have you bothered to pay attention who's broken the ceasefires first every time? Why even bother agreeing to one if you're going to wait minutes and fire another rocket? If you're the one firing the rockets first, then you are the aggressor. If you are firing rockets from a hospital or from a school, then you should expect that hospital or that school to be hit. If you are willing to use the people that you're supposed to be governing, the people you're supposed to be leading, and in this case that would be the Gazans. I'm not going to call them Palestinians. They aren't. There's no such thing as a Palestinian. I don't want to get hung up on that again today, but we've had these discussions before. A quick look at a map tells you everything you need to know. In fact, the folks calling the Golan Heights they want to call it that instead of calling it Judea. Well, why do they not want to call it Judea? Well, because Judea is literally derived from the word Jew. Why would it be called Judea if it was part of Palestine? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we've had the history lesson before. Palestine was derived from Roman word, which was just meant to be an insult to the Jews that occupied the territory that they themselves were occupying as a military force. Okay, that's where the myth began. But let's just get to the meat and the potatoes of it. Who's broken every single ceasefire? Who's fired the rockets? Who's whined about getting hit? who's dug the tunnels so that they could take cheap shots to try and kidnap innocents, to kill innocents, who's continued to target innocents for no apparent reason other than the fact that they were an easy target instead of going after, I don't know, military targets? Hamas is a terrorist organization. And while I have every bit of sympathy that I can muster for every Arab living in Gaza who's trapped, who's being used as fodder for the PR machine that Hamas is trying to use to drum up international outrage against the Israelis, you know, you're in a tough spot. I feel bad for you. You're probably the biggest victims of this whole scenario. Israel is a target, but Israel has the ability to fight back. What can you do as an Arab living in Gaza? You speak out, and you're called a traitor, and you're treated the same as any captured Israeli citizen would be. Israel wants to live in peace. How can you evidence this? Simple. If you don't believe me, just look at the fact that after countless attempts at ceasefires and having those ceasefires broken, they continue to agree to more. Even though every time they do, it just gives Hamas time to dig a new tunnel or move missiles into a new location for them to fire into Israel from. They agree to it because they're hoping that the international community, that the other Arab states nearby, will eventually intervene on behalf of the Arabs that are living in Gaza that are not part of Hamas, that are not part of this holy crusade against Israel. Because, you know, that's a legitimate concern. Israel knows there are innocent people, but Israel has done more to try and avoid hurting innocent civilians than any other military in the history of the world during actions like this. But it's still going to happen. And it's by definition, it has to happen because where Hamas is hiding. I've heard people refer to Hamas and to ISIS as butchers. And I've heard them refer to them as animals. Well, Hamas is not animals. They're not an animal. I challenge you to show me one animal that will hide behind its children and its weak to try and protect itself. Because every animal I've seen in nature puts its children behind them, stands in front of them, and tries to protect them, not use them as cannon fodder. Now, the statement has been made. The quote is there. You probably heard it before. But the bottom line is there will only be peace for Israel once a certain group of people decide that they love their children more than they hate the Jews. And that hits upon the key. The success for all future generations. It's just as true here in this country as it is anywhere else in the world. We've got to put aside the hatreds. We've got to stop being against so much stuff and start deciding what we are for. I have said it countless times. You have heard me, and I'm going to say it again. Every last one of us, as a human being, as a member of this species, we have far more in common than we have that separates us. But there are literal butchers and beasts that are consumed with hatred that are determined that if you do not join them, that you must die. And there are certain groups of people that would never be permitted to join them, namely the Jews. Those are the folks that are in charge. When you look at it, you look at the people living in Gaza. Only about 30% voted for Hamas, but that was enough to win the election because there were other splintered factions. There were still a lot of folks that voted for the political party that is the remnants of the old PLO. There were dozens of other factions and different folks, some of them even reasonable, some of them wanting to move to a very secular approach to government. And secular in that part of the world is probably not such a bad idea. So in the end, it only took a relatively small percentage of people living in Gaza to put Hamas in charge. And I really hope that every single one of those Gazans dealing with these circumstances thinks long and hard about who they're going to be voting for next time, assuming they get to vote again. One last comment on the topic before moving on, and that is, I've been hearing a lot of folks on the left still talk about a two-state solution. A two-state solution. There can't be a two-state solution. Not now. It's not possible. Hamas is in charge of Gaza and Judea, aka the West Bank. And as long as Hamas is in charge, there can never be two states. They will never accept two states. I heard a professor saying that they had moved closer to that. No, they haven't. It's in their charter. The Hamas charter. They are dedicated to the annihilation, the destruction of every last living Jew shall live no more. They want them all dead. They're not willing to accept compromise. A few of you live there, and that will be okay. No, none. They won't accept it. This has been tried. It's been offered. Back a couple of decades ago, a little more than a couple, a few decades ago, Israel was even willing to sign off on a completely second state. The PLO was in charge then. Nope, they refused. Why? Again, because the sentiment was still the same. They wanted to be handed what the Jewish people were given at the end of World War II. They wanted all that back. The majority of people that call themselves Palestinians today are refugees that were cast out of Jordan, primarily. Tried to overthrow the royal family, and they kicked them out of the country when it didn't work. But the historical facts, they're not relevant right now. What is relevant is there can't be a two-state solution until the majority of the Arabs that live in Gaza completely move away from the choice of terrorism. Terrorists cannot be your leaders, and you expect any level of actual success or peace or prosperity. It's just that simple. Israel wants to live in peace with its neighbors. Hamas wants every last Jew dead. So even if Israel was to say, here, all of this is yours now, and they were willing to attempt the two-state solution again, which currently that's not going to happen. Israel's not about to accept that either. Bibi isn't about to allow it. Because he has learned from the past. He knows what will happen. Forces will be consolidated. Alliances will be made. And the battle will start again, anew, against a yet stronger and more dug-in enemy. Because Israel has been trying for a long time to get along with its neighbors. They just want to live in peace. Hamas does not. Okay, let's take another quick break, and when we get back, we will finish things up, and I'm going to try to take not a whole lot of extra time to do that. So stay with me. We'll be right back.
Tap Into the Truth. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog post and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth right here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. I am Tim Tapp. I am your host. This is Tap Into the Truth. I am coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Kind of jumped right into the show. Didn't do much of the introductions today because, well, quite frankly, I still kind of feel like the Jesse Ventura thing is dated at this point. It's been a few weeks and the conversation has died down, but people are still talking about it. And I felt it necessary to get my two cents in because, hey, that's what I do. We moved on to some other topics. The idea that AR-15s and AK-style rifles are being referred to as assault weapons tells you they're coming from a place of prejudice against the weapon. So the government continues, through activist judges, to ignore what the Constitution actually says and tries to interpret it as meaning something completely different. We moved on to the issue of people supporting Hamas. Now, it's very easy to support Hamas when you just step back and take a look at what most of the mainstream media reports about these attacks. Oh no, today Israel blew up a UN school. Most people rarely get past the headline, so even if the article that you might be reading, or let's face it, most folks just get their news information from TV or the internet these days. So if you get past the headline of the news blip that you're seeing at the website you're looking at, or if you actually are watching television and you pay attention for more than the first few seconds that they're talking, it'd be real easy to get the very negative impression that Israel was just going around targeting schools and hospitals for no real reason. The fact that three or four UN schools have been hit over the course of the last several weeks by Israeli attacks, and they were legitimate targets, meaning they were actually targeting them. It was not a case of, oops, sorry, we were aiming for here, and our stuff messed up, and then it hit you accidentally. No, they meant to do it. And that sounds cold and calculating from the outside. It sounds like they're the ones that are attempting genocide. But you know what? I have a little problem with the UN schools being used so much, because Israel has not targeted a single location that was not verified, a location from which rockets were being fired into Israel. Now, the UN can stand here and say, hey, you know what? You know, we didn't know that Hamas was using this as a location to fire the rockets. Yeah, I might even actually believe it once. Say, all right, yeah, I can see these guys are, well, they don't have the greatest reputation, so it's certainly possible. If it happens a second time, then I'm a little less likely to be inclined to believe that, really, you didn't know. Once you get to three or four times, I'm thinking the old adage is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I think the UN has, in fact, or at least representatives of the UN that are operating these locations inside of Gaza, have been intentionally looking the other way. In essence, even if they're not actively participating in the attacks in Israel, they are certainly providing support. Israel is the enemy to a lot of people. But here's the thing that most people can't seem to really wrap their mind about. I've already told you there's no moral equivalency, but here's the real thing. See, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, they're all predicated on a simple basic premise. Fundamental Wahhabism. The idea that Islam calls for you to actively bring forth the caliphate, to actively destroy all of Jews and Christianity and Hinduism and everything that is not of Islam. Came across a story today about an ISIS terrorist, and that is what they are. They are terrorists. Now, an ISIS terrorist cut a Christian boy in half. The continued stories of kidnappings of Christian nurses who are kidnapped and then gang raped and then killed. The images of small children, girls and boys both, just being slaughtered, their throats slit, their bodies beheaded, crucifixions taking place. This is going on not only currently in Iraq, where the violence continues to expand, but it's been going on in Syria too. ISIS, for those of you who don't know what it stands for, ISIS means Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. These are the folks, these were the rebels, the Syrian rebels that Obama and, heaven help us, even folks like John McCain were so hot to go help, to give aid to. And these are the people that I firmly believe were being armed through the Benghazi consulate. I still am convinced. Now, I don't have proof. There's a lot of documents and memos and internal stuff that have been released that haven't been redacted to the point that you read nothing from it that I think supports the theory. And I'll tell you, it's just a theory at this point. This is one of my conspiracy theories, I guess, but I think it's a pretty solid one. I think Benghazi was about arming the group that eventually would become what we know today to be ISIS. They're Al-Qaeda-affiliated, Al-Qaeda-based, even though I keep hearing from certain learned professors from England, although they're not actually from England, but they're professors in England, that they're a different creature. ISIS is not Al-Qaeda. They're a different animal. Well, they may very well be, but they were spawned from the same progenitor. And that is the idea, the concept, the philosophy that is the very worst parts of Islam. Came across a story today that in New Jersey, somebody was hanging an ISIS flag from their porch. And the local police made them take it down after a bunch of complaints. I gotta tell you, I got mixed feelings on that. Because on the one hand, the very fact that anybody in this country, anybody who's been here for a little while, who's had time to see the best in America, not just the worst, or not just what you may have been told before you came here. Anybody that's been here for a little while that still would be willing to fly one, you need your ass kicked. You're supporting terrorists and you're supporting hatred. And that is not what we're about. But at the same time, I firmly believe that you've got the right to be wrong. You've got the right to fly that flag and make as many of your neighbors as angry as you want to. It's not any different than me flying my American flag out here and pissing off some of the neighbors down the street that are a little more liberal, that are like, hey, you shouldn't be doing that. I find that offensive. It's an American flag. If you find it offensive, you need to live somewhere else. The guy's property, the guy's flag, I don't like it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to drive by and see anybody flying those flags, but I don't feel like I have the right to tell them they can't. And I don't think anybody else in this country does either. I have the right to drive on and not look at it. I don't have to listen to what this person has to say. I don't have to care that they're doing it. If I see a bunch of other people start in the same neighborhood, then I need to be concerned about what anti-Americanism is building up, because, as I was saying, the thing that most Americans really don't get, especially these folks here in the States that want to support Hamas, what they don't get is Israel's enemies are America's enemies. The people that hate Israel hates America every bit as much, because we're a shining example of just the opposite of what those worst parts of Islam present. We are a shining example of everything that can be accomplished when you are a good and kind and godly people. Came across some other stories that I'm definitely going to be talking about in the next few weeks, so tune in. Group of atheists have been upset, and I may even be dedicating a whole show to a couple of different stories, some things going on. Don't have time to go into it tonight, so I'm not going to, but take heart. We are, at our basic root, the majority of us are godly people, even though most of us may have moved to a level that's fairly agnostic. We're still not to a point where we don't believe in God. We're just not that active in faith. Now, from a biblical standpoint, that's still good enough to send you to hell. Most of us don't want to believe that. Now, that's, again, one of the great things about this country is you've got the right to believe what you want, and I do not have the right to persecute you for it. And I'm not going to get on here and preach and proselytize to you. I'm not. On another day, I might. You know, if the mood hits me, I might bring the message. But that's not the point here. So I'm not going to do that. The point is, I have very strong mixed emotions about having read that story, because on the one hand, part of me wants to scream, yes! Go get that flag! Take it out of there and get them out of here! But then another part of me has this, a little alarm going off in the back of my head. I hear it because, this is America. This is the country where Jesse Ventura has the legal right to sue Chris Kyle. Was it the right thing to do? I'll even go so far as to say yes. While Chris Kyle was still alive, was it the right thing to do after Chris Kyle's death? No, it wasn't. Was it the right thing to do once you found out that you knew that the book sales were not part of the estate? No, definitely not. That's why Jesse Ventura, you're an ass. But did you have the right to do it? Is it within legal? Do you have the right to defend yourself and your good name? Yes. Yes, you do. And it was the right thing to do, to stand on the principle and to follow it through, fine. But then stand on that principle. If your principle is justice, then stand on that principle. And then when you win, or if you had lost, then justice was served either way. So at that point, justice was served. You won. So then comes the point in time to do what's right. Just because something's legal doesn't make it right. But when it comes to standing on principles, if your principles are of value, then it is the right thing to do. You want to defend your good name, and if you want to make it easier, you want to set precedent so that others can stand up and protect their good name from baseless accusations, then fine. Go for it. But then once you're done, once justice has been served, your beef was with Chris Kyle, not his widow, not his children. Don't punish people who aren't responsible for the, and here's the air quotes again, injustice that was perpetrated against you. Now, those of you will say, well, isn't that what Israel's doing to the people of Gaza? No. Sure, innocent people are being hurt. But Israel's not targeting those innocent people. Jesse Ventura was targeting an innocent widow and the children of a fallen American hero. Israel's not targeting innocent people. Israel's targeting launching points for weapons that are being used against her citizens. These people, while they may be innocent as they're getting hit, they're the unfortunate cannon fodder being used by the people that are supposed to be their leadership. So it's not the same thing. But now we look at ISIS. ISIS is running wild across Iraq. And everybody seems to think now that the Kurds are going to end up with their own independent state, and that eventually we are going to see an Iraq that's divided, perhaps even still into the one-time proposed three separate nations. If that's what it takes to stop the violence, then I'm all for it. America needs to be a leader in this part of the world, because when America is leading in this part of the world, things are more stable. America doesn't need to be in charge. It doesn't need to be taking control. But it needs to be a leader. ISIS, in response to bombings over the weekend to try and protect the group of Christians that were trapped on the mountain, several members of ISIS made large threats against the United States, one of which that really stood out from my mind, and I'll probably talk a little more in depth about that response at a later broadcast, but stood out in my mind. The little glib was made, stay safe, Seattle. Now, why did he say Seattle in particular? Could it be because he, in fact, has sleeper cells already here? Are they sending people across the southern border along with all the other so-called immigrants? Is Seattle a legitimate target? Now, these things are just things to ponder. But in truth, these people, make no mistake about it, plan on coming after the United States. They plan on coming after America as soon as they can. Israel is the little Satan. We are the big Satan. I'm going to take one more quick break, and then I'll be right back. Stay with me.
Into the truth. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog post and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth right here.
Talking about the things that we kept so safe, and I know that we won't let each other go, even through closing doors. And they don't understand what we both know.
All right, folks, we are back. Thanks for staying with me, and this will be the last segment tonight. Just wanted to make some quick closing statements, and that simply is to reiterate the main points. First and foremost, Jesse Ventura is an ass. Outside of that, though, anybody that wants to support Hamas in this current issue is either missing the point, or they're a card-carrying, full-fledged member of the jihadist movement. It's just that simple. There is no moral equivalency. And if you're not part of the Hamas movement, or if you're not a member of Hezbollah, if you're not a member of Al-Qaeda, if you're not a member of ISIS, but you still are watching some media thing, or you're hearing some Hollywood celebrity talk about, in an open letter, sign a petition, stop the genocide. Well, hey, I'm all for stopping the genocide, but the genocide is not being perpetrated by Israel. It's time for you to get your head out of your backside, take a look at the facts, and see what's really going on. Take a look at the Hezbollah activities over the last decade. Take a look at the Hamas charter. Their charter. Their founding document. What they're all about. See where they swear to bring about the demise of all the Jewish people. That's genocide. That has nothing to do with a two-state solution or an effort to live in peace. Take a look at the fact that Israel has agreed time and time again to ceasefires, and take a look at who's broken those ceasefires. Take a look at the fact that, plain and simple, right in front of you, easy to see, that Hamas leadership will go on Arabic-speaking television and say one thing, get the translator, and then they'll come on English-speaking television and say something completely different. And they get angry if you try to point out something that they have said. They're front men who go out and do the PR campaign and work against the Jewish people, and then by proxy, the American people. Any Western people, Canadians, British, French, German, any freedom-loving people who has the idea of individual liberty, you are a threat and you are the enemy. And if you will not submit to Islam, you will be killed. That's who you're dealing with Hamas. That's who you're dealing with ISIS. That's who you're dealing with Al-Qaeda. And it doesn't matter if they're in Syria, or if they're in Iraq, or if they're in Iran, or if they're in Miami, Florida. That doesn't change. That is who they are. That is who they will always be. And these people are waiting. They're waiting for their chance to come to your home and to either force you to convert or to crucify you in your yard, to take your young children out and behead them. We have a horrible vacuum of leadership here in the States among those who are elected officials. We have Nancy Mimi Pelosi running across the floor of the House trying to chase somebody away from the microphone because they're pointing out a simple fact about the so-called immigration crisis. And I say so-called immigration, hinting on immigration, because immigration is a legal process. What you have going on our southern border is an invasion. It's not a migration. It's not immigration. It is an illegal crossing of our border. And for those who don't like the term illegal, it's a description of their status here.
Oh, people can't be illegal.
No, but they can do illegal things, can't they? Mr. O'Keefe recently put on a Bin Laden costume and crossed the border. Sure, it's just a publicity stunt, but it makes the point that anybody can be crossing our border right now. We keep focusing on Hispanics, most of which may very well be harmless enough. We know there's plenty of gang members coming across. We know there's lots of criminals coming across. There's no question. But then there's also a lot of people that are just under this misconception that, hey, life's a lot better here, and they want to come here, and they don't think there's any repercussions to doing it this way. And, you know, it really seems like there probably isn't, at least under this administration. This isn't about a lack of compassion for these people either. It is about law, orderly immigration, and controlling who comes in and who goes out so that we do, in fact, know who's here. So we don't have to be overly concerned about, is there someone coming to Dallas, Texas with a dirty bomb to hurt a bunch of innocent people? The world is on fire. And the people in D.C., they want to argue about procedure. They want to demonize Ted Cruz for breaking procedure because he went and talked to some like-minded people in the House. But has anybody come out and demonized Nancy Pelosi for her breaking of procedure when she chased a Republican away from the microphone because he simply made the statement that in the first 2 years of the Barack Obama presidency, the Democrats had a chance then to deal with immigration, but they lacked the courage to do so? They had firm control, a veto-proof control of the House and the Senate, and they had the White House. They could have done anything they wanted. The only thing they did was ram the Affordable Health Care Act down the throats of the American people. They talk about Republicans being obstructionists. Guess what? That's part of the opposition party's job. Read the Constitution and understand why they have the authority and the power. And for God's sakes, John Boehner, start using your power as the Speaker of the House. The House has the purse strings. The House at any point in time can stop funding things. And without the money to go fund the program goes away. They can stop it. And there's nothing that the Senate can do about it, and there's nothing that the White House can do about it. They're just out of luck until they are finally willing to come to the table and actually negotiate, possibly even, dare I say the dirtiest word right now amongst my more loyal listeners, compromise. Because the problem with compromise with liberals is you're supposed to move halfway to their standing point, and then 3 weeks later, they want you to compromise again, and you're supposed to do the exact same thing. Till eventually, you're so far to the left that you can't imagine ever getting back to the conservative side of the argument ever again. So that's that. And that's all. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to cut things off here, but I appreciate you listening to my rants. Hope that you found it entertaining and at least somewhat enlightening and maybe even learned something. And I hope that we are all in agreement that Jesse Ventura is an ass. Because that's where I'm at tonight. Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember that you can find the show and podcast right here at Spreaker. You also can find the podcast availability at tapintothetruth.com, along with various links, videos, blogs, all kinds of information, including links to friends of the show. Also, while you're at it, you can find the podcast available at iTunes. You can find us at Stitcher.com. You can find us at TuneIn.com. Please, go ahead and take a look. You can find the show. It's easy enough. Also, a quick reminder, all the music you hear during the breaks, the bumper music, is provided through a service called Magnatune. Pay a small monthly fee for the service, and in return, that money ends up going to independent artists. These folks are out there trying to make it on their own. This is a great way to make sure that they get paid. So as a result, all this bumper music is in fact podcast safe. It's okay to be rebroadcast and listened to. And no copyright infringements, none of that terrible legal stuff that gets a lot of podcasters in trouble, at least in the early days of the podcasting. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I do hope that you are still having a wonderful day, whatever day you've caught this show. Hope you enjoyed it. And remember, don't take my word for it, but definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Always be prepared to do a little bit of your own work. Do some research on your own. Because understand, you're going to have to put in a little bit of effort on your own if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it, and good night, everybody. Love drunk.